off. Parsha Shlach. So everybody knows basically what's going on in this parsha. You should send out men. They should spy out Eretz Canaan. Each man, one man per shevet, should be sent. Each one of them should be a big kamakachem. That's the idea, and that's what's going on. The Chidushi Arim asks 10 questions. 10 questions altogether. The 10 of them being strong, huge questions, which really, it gets the crux of what the Maragim are all about. Number one, Asela Chot Tzitzis. Right? You should make for yourself tzitzis. Is that a mitzvah or just a suggestion? It's a mitzvah. Anytime it says the word lecha, it refers to a mitzvah. Why over here is Shlach Lecha Anoshim? Rashi says, if you want to, you can send, but I don't want you to do it. All of a sudden, it's not a mitzvah? Every other place where it says the word Lachem or Lecha, Ulakatem Lachem by Yom Rishon, you should take for yourself an Esrog and Hadassim and everything else. You're supposed to take it for yourself. It's a mitzvah. Here, why wouldn't it be a mitzvah? That's question number one. But what happened that it's not a mitzvah?
When Hashem says to Moshe, Lecha for you, it sometimes means it's only like Hara for
Moshe. That's our question. Our question is why? Yeah, why is it over here not that way?
It's not a... It's not
a mitzvah chiyuvis. It's right? It's a mitzvah. Fine, it's a mitzvah. Right now, Shlach Lecha Anoshim should be the same way it is by everything else. It should be a regular mitzvah. That's number one.
Wait,
I'm saying over here,
the Meraglim.
Yeah, the Meraglim. Why is it that way? That's number one. Number two, what was the need for the Meraglim in the first place? What was the purpose of these spies that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt like he allowed them to go? If there was a bad thing altogether, if it wasn't a good idea, then he should have sent them immediately. Don't send them. That should have been the first thing out of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mouth. The Moshe Rabbeinu said, we're thinking about sending Meraglim. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, it's a bad idea, but if you want to go ahead and do it, go ahead and do it. No, if it's a bad idea, don't let them go. That's a bad idea. So it must be that it was a good idea. So what's the purpose of the Meraglim? What was the purpose of sending out these spies that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu who felt that there was a purpose behind them? That's number two. Number three, these were great men. Everyone agrees they were tzaddikim. They were unbelievably holy men. There's no one that says that these guys were rishayim, not until after they came out. Everybody agrees in the beginning they were tremendously big tzaddikim. How could they think about speaking Lashon Hara? Obvious question, but what did they do to make them speak Lashon Hara? That's number three. Number four, what was so bad that Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven for Yoshua and Kalev? And he went up to Yoshua and he said, God should save you from the eights of the Meraglim. He should save you from the spies. And Kalev, what did Kalev need to do? He needed to go down on the Kibrei Avos, on the Kfarim of the Avos, and beg for mercy to be able to get away from the eights of the Meraglim. What in the world was so bad? If it was so bad, then why did they go in the first place? If Moshe Rabbeinu knew it beforehand, don't send Yoshua. If you're worried about something, don't send him. It seems silly that the whole thing happened in the first place if everybody knew it was going to be so bad. Number five. Yonas ben Uziel says in his parish, Kad Hama Moshe and Visanuse di Yoshua ben Nun. When he saw the anivus, the humility of Yoshua ben Nun, once he saw that humility, then he gave him the yod. What does humility have to do with anything? Well, all of a sudden he was humbled, the other guys weren't, so he gets a yud? What does that have to do with anything? Number six, why specifically a yud? Number seven, it came from Sarah. Why did it have to come from Sarah, Yemenu, this yud, to be given over to Yoshua? What would be the point of that? Number eight, in the end, what do the Meraglim do? They come back and they say exactly what they were supposed to say. They spoke the truth. They said exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu would ask them to do. Moshe Rabbeinu said, tell me if the land is good or bad, if it's fortified or they're open cities. Tell me if the men are strong or weak. They came back. They said they're strong. It's huge fortified cities. The people are crazy. We're never going to be able to defeat them. That's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted. He asked that question in the first place, and that's what he got back. What in the world is such a pella that we say, like, oh man, he shouldn't have said that. It's exactly what Moshe asked them to say. That's the biggest pella in the world. What was going on with Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay, that's number eight. Number nine, how could Chazal darshan the following thing? It says the Meraglim ended up saying, Ki chazachu mimenu, because it's stronger than us. And Chazal say, Al tikru mimenu, el mimenu. It's not saying that it's referring to Bnei Yisrael, that the giants are stronger than Bnei Yisrael. That's not what they were referring to. It's that they thought that the giants were stronger than God. what kind of an idiot would think after seeing Kriyas Yamsuf, all the Makos, after all the crazy things that happen throughout the Midbar, you have the air, you have the mud, you have the clouds surrounding you at all times, you say, you're not going to be able to win, they're too strong for us. What kind of a fool would make such a claim? Nobody would make such a claim. It's such a strange thing. How could they even darshan that they would have said such a thing? And number 10, they're called tzaddikim. And then when they come back, it says, Vayelchu Vayavohu, they went and they came. Says Rashi, it compares their leaving to their coming. That just like when they came back, they had evil in their heads. When they left, they had evil in their heads as well. If they had evil in their heads, why did they go? It just, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. The Chazals are so to each other throughout the whole parsha. They're tzaddikim, but they're not. And then they do this, but Moshe Rabbeinu knew what was going to happen in the first place. So what's happening? What was the whole purpose of the Meraglim that was so important that they have to send them out there? So that's the main question. Those are the 10 questions of the Chiddush Arim. So he says the following. If you want to be a mashpia on others, you want to affect other people, and you want to make them listen to you and sort of like follow in your footsteps, there's a huge danger inherent in that. You can't expect to go to college kiruv and go on campus and not be affected by the people that's there. It's impossible. There's no way you can do it. If you're going to be around people that are not on the same spiritual level as you, you're going to lose that spiritual level that you're on. It's nearly impossible to keep it. Because there's no way. Even Avraham Avinu himself, the Chassam Sofer in the Pituchei Chosam, which is the Akdamah Yoredeya in the Shalos V'Tshuvos, says that Avraham Avinu was never a Navi. He was never roi to be a Navi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him Nebuah for free, but he wasn't fitting to be a Navi. Why? Because he worked on the Aleph Beis all day with people. He was, I hate to say it this way, but he was a first grade Rebbe. And a first grade Rebbe is not going to be on the same level, lofty level, as a guy who's sitting and learning all day long. So Avraham Avinu wasn't at that level. It's impossible to stay on that level. You just can't do it. Because anything that happens, a leader of Klal Yisrael has to make sure that even though he's the greatest among Klal Yisrael, he's not swayed by all the people. That he shows his iron fist against everybody else. That if they start saying to him, we want this, or we want that, or we want to do this, or we want to do that, the leader says to them, no, this is what we're doing because this is the right thing to do. That's what a leader has to do, and if a leader doesn't do that, then he'll be swayed by them, he's going to be affected by them, and something bad will happen. That's the maisa with Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch and Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, such an unbelievable person. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said about Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, he was a mayan miskader, a spring that kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. That's in Pirkei Avos Tarek Beis. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was the person who came out with Lev Tov. He was the guy who said that the greatest needed to have is a good heart. To be able to say that to such a person. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch would said, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you would take all the chachamim of Klal Yisrael, put them on a scale, put them on one side, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch on the other side, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch would be the greatest out of everyone in Klal Yisrael combined. And Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch went to a city. And in this city, there was pleasurable waters. There was a lot of good food there. And he started eating and drinking, and he got so swayed after it that he came back from that city after months there, and he read the Torah, and he said, HaCheresh Haya Libam, instead of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. He misread HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, the first mitzvah of Klal Yisrael. That was what happened to Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, because when you get drunk on the waters there, that's the I guess you could say the proverbial, if you start hanging out with the masses and start doing things like everybody else, then eventually you're going to be the masses. You're not going to be any different. Bnei Yisrael wanted miracle. And Moshe said to them, they went up to Moshe and they asked for him. And it seems like Moshe was just masking to them. It seems like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, fine, if they're going to complain like this, I'm just going to give it to them. It can't be, says the Chiddush HaRim. Because we know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest leader of all time, which means that this plan must have been such a superb plan that even if they wouldn't have asked for it, the Meraglim still would have been done. So what was the point of the Meraglim? What was the idea behind that plan? What was it? What was Bnei Yisrael's life like? What was life like right now in the Midbar? Sitting in clouds, moving escalators. You know, they didn't have to walk. The clouds moved for them. Whenever they needed to go anywhere. It was like being in O'Hare, but like wherever you went, something just moved you wherever you went. You had the Be'er Shel Miriam, which went everywhere, little tributaries of water wherever you needed to go. You had Mahan, that tasted like anything you could possibly want. You were in constant miracle land. For a full year, Bnei Yisrael were like that. And this is after Matan Torah. This is after Kriyas Yamsuf. This is after all the great miracles that they had experienced up until now. Now they have even more so. They have miracles every single day in everything they do. Their whole lives are Nisim Gluyim. Nobody has ever, and no nobody will ever live a life like this in Olam Hazeh. A life of just nisim gluyim every day, wherever you step, you have another nis. We just look outside and it's a cloud. A cloud surrounding you that's protecting you from the elements. There's never been anyone like this. No one. And now they're about to go to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael also has nisim. There's miracles in Eretz Yisrael itself. But it's a different type of an ace. It's not an ace galui anymore. It's not a revealed miracle where you have miracles all the time. They're called nisim nistarim. Nature, by definition, is an ace nister. Yeah, you can, in theory, explain, if you take biology, how it's possible for grass to grow from the ground, how animals to move around, how all these things to be out there. In theory, you can explain a lot of these types of things. But that's just an ace nister. That's what a Kaddish Baruch Hu embedded within the world for the world to work that way. That's the concept. If you look at the world and you just say, oh, that's just trees blowing in the wind, but you don't see God, that's a problem. That's an issue. Because there's a nace in every single thing that happens. The fact that we move, the fact that we can talk, the fact that we have an eye, anything. You know how thankful you can get after losing your voice for a couple days? When you sit there and you just say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you so much for not letting me have this problem 362 days out of a year, for me to just have this 3 days out of a year to not be able to talk. That's the pshat behind Emunas Itecha, the line that's used, what all the different six darim of Mishnayos. The word Emunas is a reference to Seder Zroyim. Seder Zroyim is growing plants and plowing and everything like that. What does that have anything to do with Emunah? Because the whole pshat is, if you treat your plants as just, this is natural, it's going to happen on its own. That's garbage. That's garbage. You lost everything. You lost absolutely everything. If you treat it with Emunah, the only reason why I have a job, the only reason why I'm able to learn anything, the only reason why I'm able to retain anything is because the Kaddish Baruch Hu allows me to have it. That's the real way to live this world. And if you do that, then you'll understand how God works, how God is running inside your world, even though you don't see Him all the time. That's the concept of how a person is supposed to be over here, and the proper way of learning this world. But obviously, that's really, really hard. I mean, we still have the problem today. Even when we go about our daily business, not like we sit there and we're like, oh, that's God, that's this, and that's everything. That's really, really hard. It's a huge Nisayan. Can you imagine what kind of a Nisayan that would be if you lived in miracle land your entire life, where crazy things were happening for you at all times, and then all of a sudden, the next day, Monday, you had the bear, you had Mun, you had Anun and everything around you, and then the next day, all right, it's time to plow. What? What do you mean? We were just learning all day long. We had everything taken care of for us. And now all of a sudden you're asking me to plow the land and to plant? No way I'm going to be able to do it. How in the world is Bnei Yisrael supposed to go out from these Nisim Gluyim into these Nisim Nistarim? How is that supposed to happen? How is it ever going to be? That was the challenge of the Meraglim. This was the idea of what the Meraglim stood for. All these spies. This is what they meant and this is what it was supposed to be. They knew it was necessary. But it was filled with fear and filled with danger. They had to go in. Al pi derech hateva. Even though they're so used to all these miracles, go into Eretz Yisrael with nature, with natural causes. Don't do anything crazy. You're not bringing any mud with you. You're not bringing the bear of Miriam with you. You're not bringing the clouds with you. You're going to walk in. You're going to see enemies there. And you're going to have to believe that a Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to protect you. You're going to have to say to yourself, God is with me at all times. Where am I going to get my food? You'll get it. You can't leave over the mud. You couldn't bring anything with them into Eretz Canaan. Where are we going to eat? You'll find it when you get in there. You'll find it, you'll be fine. What are we going to do to stay away from all the giants? Don't worry, it'll be taken care of. The Meraglim's plan was to go straight from Nisim Gluyim into Nisim Nistarim. And that's not easy. That's really not easy, even for the greatest tzaddik, to keep up his lofty level of Amunah, even in the most dire circumstances, when it looks like God is no longer with you. When it looks like God is no longer around you. You don't have the clouds protecting you. That sukkah shalom that's around you at all times. The greatest tzaddikim can go to such a tummy place and still be affected. And that's the problem with the Meraglim. They knew they had to lead the Meraglim in because you had to get the Nais all ready for it. You have to start it off slow. Throw in 12 guys, 12 great tzaddikim, 12 guys that can handle it, that we think can handle it. Throw them in there. Throw them right into the fire. Literally, throw them into the flames. Let's see if they can have Emunah in natural lives. Let's see what they can do. And who knows what's going to happen? That's why it was so scary, even in the beginning. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, we got to do something. We can't just throw Bnei Yisrael in there and let 600,000 people just fend for themselves and all of a sudden try to find God by planting a wheat kernel. That's not going to happen. Bnei Yisrael have to have somebody going in first. So they went. They went in and they felt nothing. They didn't feel God with them. They didn't feel like there was anybody there because they forgot what it was like to live a natural life without miracles around you. They didn't feel like God was around them wherever they went. So therefore, they couldn't see God in nature. Kal v'chomer, even more so, Bnei Yisrael wouldn't see God in nature. And therefore, if Bnei Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael right now, what would happen to them? They'd immediately start sinning. They'd immediately forget about who God was and what God was, and they'd be kicked out of the land. They'll be thrown out of the land and nothing good will happen.
Set them up. With their children who grew up in the miracle land and then never saw Mitzrayim, and they for sure would have that problem.
Yeah. So the Meraglim said, we're scared. We're scared. They went back and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bnei Yisrael is going to succumb to their taivas. They brought back the grapes. Look, can you imagine getting drunk on this thing? Can you imagine getting drunk on this? Look at these fruits. They're huge. One man can carry these fruits. One person can do it. It's better to stay in the desert. Better to stay here forever. Leave here forever. Is it? We're learning with Moshe Rabbeinu. We get to be here with the Anan and with the Be'er, with the Mon. Let's live here forever. This is Olam Haba. Live like this. Don't go into Eretz Yisrael. It's not good to get into natural lives because we messed up this way. We got messed up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that's not what this world is all about. It's not what it's all about. It's not what we're here for. What we're here for is to go into Eretz Yisrael and live lives in which you don't necessarily see God. And find God within the strangest things, within all the most strangest things out there. The punishment was for Bnei Yisrael to be around for another 39 years. It sounds like, well, they got exactly what they wanted. The Meraglim wanted another couple years in the desert and that's it. No! The Meraglim wanted to stay there forever and never leave. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, now I'm going to make it harder for you. I'm going to make it even harder for you to live in Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to give you another 39 years of the Midbar, 39 years of constant miracles, and then I'm going to throw you right into Eretz Yisrael. Let's see how you can handle it then. The punishment that was given to Klal Yisrael was a tremendous punishment. We know what happened with that. The Bnei Yisrael started sinning right afterward. It was a big problem. The only way to get around it was the Meraglim. What was the next time that they sent the Meraglim? Yazir. But we'll skip Yazir for right now. Next time they sent Meraglim was? Yoshua. And they sent them into? Yericho. What happened in Yericho? Kalev and Pinchas went into Yericho by themselves, found the Kedusha, found Rachav, and turned the most tame of people ever. Isn't it a strange thing that the place where Kalev and Yericho were staying was a Beis HaZnus? Isn't that strange? Wouldn't you expect a little bit better from Eliyahu HaNavi and Kalev? Wouldn't you expect? Yeah, you get the little, like, yeah, you know.
You're
going to Vegas. Yeah, exactly. Kalev and Pinchas are into Vegas. They're going around, and they're just like, yeah, this is the place to go. Obviously not. Obviously, Chas V'Shalom.
I don't know. It's like the Al-Qaeda guys who, on September 11th, who went to, like, the strip club, and they went drinking the night before.
Thank you for saying that, I'd say. But anyway. Regardless. The fact is, obviously... Obviously, Khalid and Pinchas could never, ever have done such a thing. That never would have happened. There's no such thing. So what were Khalid and Pinchas doing? Because the whole point of Meraglim is to go to the most tameh parts, to go to the people that can't handle this, the place that is the most natural, so to speak, and make it supernatural, and make it unbelievably miraculous. They turned Rachav into a Gioras. They grabbed Rachav and made her into a Gioras. She married Yoshua, for gosh sake. The greatest Zona that there was out there. Where the Gemara says it's crazy things about Rachav Zona, how beautiful she was. Crazy things about her. She was turned into a Gioras. Why? Because the Kedusha that they instilled in that area turned her around. She realized what Kedusha was. And she looked at them and she said, we're scared of you guys. We're unbelievably scared of you guys. We can't handle being around you. We want to be Gerim. That's what happened to Rachav Zona. That's what the Meraglim should have been. They should have gone to Eretz Yisrael, and immediately they walk in Eretz Yisrael and they say, God is with us. And anyone that looked at them should have seen an aura, should have seen this Kedusha that stemmed from them, and they should have automatically said, whoa, we're staying away from these people. We're not going anywhere near these people. It would have been a natural, just scared out of their minds. But the Meraglim didn't go in that way. They were scared. Yoshua was an anav. What's the meat of a humble person? To always think you're nothing. If you always think you're nothing, then for sure you're going to succumb to that title. You're going to succumb to, oh, these giants are too great for me. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I have to help him out. I have to give him a yud. I have to give him a little bit of extra strength. The strength of Sara Imenu. The point of Sara Imenu is because Sara Imenu was a person who could live among those tummy people and remain the most kadosh of all people out there. That's who Sara was. So he gave that strength to be that way, even amongst the most tummy people, gave that strength over to Yoshua, that you can go in and you won't have any problems. problems. Kalev didn't have it. Kalev was married to Miriam. He was married to Miriam. He had a tremendous amount of kedusha from the amount that Miriam was able to take. But even Kalev needed to be nishtateach al kibri avos. He had to prostrate himself in the kibri avos and say to the avos, "Help me! I can't take this. I'm losing it. I don't see a Kadosh Baruch Hu." And only then did he get it. That's the concept, and that's the idea of what they were doing, in the of what Bnei Yisrael were supposed to do. That's number one. That was the idea of the Meraglim. That answers, if you go through all 10 questions, it answers every one except for one. Except for one. And I don't know why the Chiddush HaRim didn't answer number 5. Let's go on to one thing. Shlach V'chol HaNashim. It was a mitzvah. This is the only way for them to be able to go in. It wasn't just, "I'll give you rishus." If it's just rishus, Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have worded it that way. It's saying, he's saying, this is tzach. It's scary. I'm telling you, it's scary. If you want to go through with it, I'm telling you, something is going to happen. There's going to be a lot, you have to do a lot more to get into it in order for this to happen. But if you go in, meaning you have to go in, when you go in, this will be the best thing for you. But you have to be scared of this. It's not easy to get around this. That was the whole point of Shlach Lecha. The mitzvah is to go in. The mitzvah is to be able to make sure that they go in. However, it's scary. And if you wouldn't have asked for it, I wouldn't have forced you to do it. I wouldn't have forced
him. Why did he ask for it?
But in the end, this is the best thing for Christ. Moshe Rabbeinu knew it, and the Meraglim knew it. In the end, Kalev and Yeshua did make it. If the other 10 would have made it, this would have been, immediately would have been the Olam HaTikva. Would have been the world that we wanted. Yes.
So why did Moshe only prepare Yeshua for it? Like, he gave him the Yud.
He thought the others. Thought the others were prepared in themselves. You should know that's where the Chidah comes in, and all the other Meforshim, which we said in previous years, that it wasn't just the Meraglim going. He called down each one of the Dugulim of the Shvatim to go into each one of these people to be able to help them out in everything they were doing. It's not just Stam that they were just running around and like all of a sudden like, "Oh my gosh, I'm scared." They had the Shvatim within them, and even the Shvatim Kabiyachol messed up within this. They were thinking differently. They left them. But Kalev had Ruach Acheres Hoisebo. He went to the Avos, and he had the Avos HaKadoshim. They're Gugulim with him, and that's how he was able to go. That's why you have to go into the other boards. He thought that they were going to be fine on their own. Yeshua needed extra help because he was weaker than everybody else. That's the only reason why he helped out Yeshua more than anybody else. But he thought that these guys, these were the strongest, these were hand-picked by Moshe Rabbeinu to do this. He thought they'd be able to do it, and they didn't. Rav Wolfson adds on an unreal point. I couldn't believe this when I read it. And it's he doesn't quote the Chiddush HaRim, but I think it's exactly the point of the Chiddush HaRim. He must have seen it right before he wrote it. It's the exact same point. He says, this was the 10th Nisayan of Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it straight out in Parak Yud Dalet Pasuk Chaf Beis. This was the 10th test that Bnei Yisrael had gone through. It was the final straw. They were now not allowed to go inside Eretz Yisrael. 10 things altogether. Avraham also had 10 tests. Avraham's 10th Nisayan was the Akedah. As we all know, number 10 was the Akedah. What was the connection between number 10, the Akedah, and this number 10, the Meraglim? What was that connection over here between the Meraglim over here, these spies, and the Akedah back then? What was it? What happened? I'm sorry?
That's the travel.
But what was the what was it that went together? So Wilson says it's simple. No other test by Avraham Avinu has the Satan working, trying to stop Avraham Avinu from doing what he was doing. The Medrash goes crazy by the Akedah. He made a huge river. Avraham Avinu had to go all the way up to his neck in the river, and he cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of a sudden, the river disappeared. Old men appearing out of nowhere, going up to Avraham Avinu and being like, "What are you doing? Are you trying to sacrifice your kid? Didn't you tell me that I'm not allowed to sacrifice my kid?" Showing the contradiction in Avraham Avinu's words. This Satan was doing crazy things. Even at the very end, when the ram is running toward Avraham Avinu to be sacrificed in the place of Yitzchak, he brings a thorn bush there and catches the ram. The Satan works overtime in the 10th Nisayan, because he knew that if Avraham Avinu passed this test, Avraham Avinu was going to have a nation like no other. Listen to this pshat. Says Rav Wolfson, what's the pshat behind the Akedah? What was the big test? Everybody says that he sacrificed his son, and that he this and that and the other. Says Rav Wolfson, Vayar es ha-makom merachok. He saw the place from far away. What does it mean from far away? It means he felt distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He looked at it and he said, wait a second. Why would God have said this to me? He had doubts in his own head. Avraham Avinu had doubts in his own head. Could HaKadosh Baruch Hu really have told me that? But he told me all my children will come from Yitzchak. How could he have told me that? Now I have to sacrifice them. He had his own doubts. And the Satan wasn't helping matters. The Satan was going up to him and saying, no, you're wrong. That's not what God said. God never said it that way. God was saying crazy things to him. And the Satan was saying crazy things to him. And Avraham Avinu was fooled. He didn't know what to do. He's sitting there saying, I don't know. But Akev, at the very end, he said, I'm going to do it. He just got there and he said, it's worth it for me to do. I'm just going to do it. At the end, Akev Tishmuun El Mitzos Hashem, the Akev, the Malach told him, Akev Asher Shemati Bekoli. In the end, you listen to my voice. Because you did that, because you listened to my voice, you will have everything you need for the rest of your life. And he defeated the Satan with that Akev with the very end. The Satan was highly involved with the Meraglim. Everything the Meraglim did was all about the Satan. The Hayamim Yemei Bikurei Anavim. What do those words mean? The days were
the grape harvest.
The grape, not only the grape harvest, the early crops of the grapes. What does that have to do with anything? Oh, because there were big grapes, and they brought grapes back, right? Says in Itzut Shemshem, Shemshem Astropolia, Anavim, the letters Ayin, Nun, Beis, and Mem. If you look at Bikure, the letters before them, the letters that are right there before Ayin, Nun, Beis, Mem, before an Ayin is Samach. Before the Nun, a Mem. Before the Beis, an Aleph. Before the Mem, a Lamed. Anavim stands for Sam Kel, the name of the Satan. That those days were the days where the Satan was ruling in Eretz Yisrael. The Satan was all over the place trying to destroy Bnei Yisrael, trying to make sure the Meraglim did not succeed. Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, Yishazaktem, I want you to be strong, because know that you're going up against the Satan, it's not going to be easy. Be strong. Hold your ground. Make sure that you do what you're supposed to do and listen to what it says. Ulakachtem mi pri aretz, and take from the fruit of the land. Guys, why did he tell them to take from the fruit of the land? The fruit of the land was what caused them to speak Lashon Hara. They showed them the grapes. They said, look how crazy these grapes are. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu tell them that? And if he did tell them that, why didn't Yoshua and Kalev take grapes? What happened to Yoshua and Kalev? Yoshua and Kalev didn't take any grapes. Why didn't they take any grapes? The answer is so simple. He never told them to take it out. He told them, eat them. Take the grapes for yourselves. Eat the grapes that are strong. And here's why. Why was everybody dying in the middle of Eretz Yisrael? When they came in, they saw everybody dying all over the place. Where did the mun come from? The mun. It's angel food, right? It's angel food. It came from the heavens. It rained down and everything was all good. Mun is spiritual food. It came from the physical food in Eretz Yisrael. The physical grapes and figs and pears and everything else that was in Eretz Yisrael had a spiritual component to it. And it's something ruchnius, that if you ate it, you felt a little bit more kedusha. But that spirituality was taken away from the fruits and given to Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar. And it was called the mun. The mun was just that. When they went into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, you know how you find this Kedusha? You know what you can do to bring Kedusha into Eretz Yisrael, to make everything holy? Take the idea of the mun. Make a bracha on the fruit in Eretz Yisrael. Make Kedusha enter inside that fruit. And if you do that, if you bring Kedusha inside the fruit, you're going to eat it and you're going to feel the Kedusha. It's going to feel like the mun. Because the mud is only by us, because we're out here. But if Jews go to Eretz Yisrael, and you eat it with the proper kavanas and the proper brachos, you'll be able to get that kedusha even in Eretz Yisrael. That's ulakasami priyards. You want to be strong? Eat from the fruit of the land by making a bracha, making sure that you're doing it in the right way. That's the whole line. Kalev said to Bnei Yisrael, kilach menuhem. They are our bread. That's our gashmiya stick of food over there. They're only big because they're eating these huge fruit, but it's just making them bigger, not spiritually stronger. That's why they were dying. Too much good food kills you. It kills you after a while because there's no ruchnius to it. There's no spirituality to it. You can't stop yourself. That was the idea. Kalev was able to eat the fruits in Eretz Yisrael. Yoshua ate the fruits in Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim didn't feel it, so they brought it out of Eretz Yisrael to bring it to them and show them, see, compare the two. See these fruits, see the mun. Eat this, eat that. Which one feels better to you? Of course the mun feels better. But if you make a bracha on the fruits, you're bringing the spirituality of the mun into the fruits. That's the kedusha of the peros of Eretz Yisrael. I cannot tell you how good strawberries are in Eretz Yisrael. They're not as good here. It's just not the same. But if you make a bracha on them, and that's not even a fruit, you go ahead and you make a bracha on them, then all of a sudden it makes it into something good. I don't like figs or dates, so I can't really tell you about that. They're really good. All Spartan will tell you that they're really, really good. That's the concept. The concept is, put it over there. Here's the pshat. We're going to end with this. This is the ending. Anovim. Bikuri Anovim. Right? The first letters are Samech Mem Aleph Lamed. There's a problem. Mitzvot HaShemshem must have known that there's a Yud in the Pasuk. Bikuri Anovim. Ayin Nun Beis Yud Mem. He never gave a Yud. What happened to the letter before that? What happened to that Yud? Says Rav Wolfson, that's the whole point. If you put the Yud into the Anovim, if you put God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, into the grapes, that makes them Kadosh. That's what makes them into real grapes. That takes them away from the Satan, from some kill. That takes them away from all of his powers. You have to put the Yud into the grapes. That's why Yoshua got a Yud. To put the Kedusha into the fruits that he eats in Eretz Yisrael. That's the whole idea of the Yud. That's why the only letter that's big in this week's Parsha, the Ata Yigdal No Koach Hashem. The Yud in Yigdal is a huge Yud. It's a bigger Yud than everywhere else because the point is to put God into what you do. That's the concept of putting the Ruchnius into the Gashmius. Had the Meraglim done that, had the Meraglim put that Ruchnius into the Gashmius, they would have done unbelievable things in Eretz Yisrael. The whole land would have been spiritually taller. The whole land would have been ready for Bnei Yisrael to go right inside and everything would have been good. But they didn't. They didn't see it. They didn't want to do it. They didn't go through, and that was the problem. Why was it? That's the whole reason why the grapes are so heavy. 8 people carried a cluster of grapes. I don't know how heavy the cluster of grapes were. It's a lot. It's big. But 8 people carrying a cluster of grapes? How big are those grapes? Have you ever carried a dead body? Ever picked up a dead body? If you've ever worked for the Chavra Kedisha? It's very easy to carry a live person. Because when a person's alive and he has a neshama, he lifts himself up. But if a person's dead and it's dead weight, it's a lot heavier. If the grapes have kedusha in them, then they're easy to lift and anybody can lift them up. But if they're dead grapes and it's just gashmius without ruchnius, then they're heavy as anything. And it took 8 people in Klal Yisrael to be able to lift that up and bring it back to the camp. That's the concept that we're saying over here. That's why Parshas Nisachim follows the Meraglim. Parshas Nisachim is the proper way to use grapes. Nisachim means wine libations. This is what you use the grapes for. You use it for wine libations. That's the entire idea. Putting the Yud into the grapes and using it for the proper idea. If you do that, if you do that, those Anovim, then Akev will come in. Anovim is the same gematria as Akev, of course. You know, see that coming from a mile away. But the same gematria as Akev. It's a concept of putting that Kedusha in, then in the end, you'll see how you can use everything, even a bowl of chalice, or even a Coke, or even anything you have, can be made into the most spiritual food out there. You can feel the mun within that food, within that drink. That's the concept. All you need to do is make a bracha. That's what the Meraglim failed to do. That's what they failed at. And had they done it, the whole plan was a good plan. That was the failure. And it was really, really hard for them to do. Summary. Problems with the Meraglim. The 10 problems of the Chedush HaRim. Chedush HaRim says the purpose was to get Bnei Yisrael used to Gashmias. Rav Wolfson adds that the way to do that is to add Ruchnias to that Gashmias. The Meraglim failed to do so. We cannot fail to do so. We have to make those brachos. So if anybody doesn't make a bracha achrona after eating what they just made here, that'll be a problem. Everybody should make a bracha achrona. Have a good Shabbat. Of course.